Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, even though the roads are largely clear today, I'm guessing you're still feeling just a little different atmosphere in the air around the area now that the Senate is no longer in the clutches of Harry Reid. So hopefully you're still feeling more relaxed and joyful than even usual.
Yeah, Authenticity Woods Public Schools decided that they would have a delayed opening just for fun today. apparently, parents had it too easy, and it was time to throw a monkey wrench into the day's plans. Because after all, it had snowed yesterday, so we needed a late opening today. So anyway, I'm ready to dive into three martinis, Greg.
Excellent. You probably need three real ones when we're done, too. All right, on to the good martini now, and this might seem a little bit counterintuitive, but just as the Republicans were strengthening their majority in the House yesterday with the new swearing-ins, and the Republicans took control of the U.S. Senate, now with 54 seats, a very strong majority, the White House, while saying that they want to cooperate with Republicans, threw a bunch of cold water on what is expected to be the first major initiative, and that, of course, being the Keystone XL pipeline. Here's White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest.
You know, this piece of legislation is not altogether different than legislation that was introduced in the last Congress. And you'll recall that we put out a statement of administration position indicating that the president would have vetoed had that bill passed the previous Congress. And I can confirm for you that if this bill passes this Congress, the president wouldn't sign it either.
And that, of course, is in reference to the Mary Landrieu train wreck in the lame duck session. Jim, this is obviously not good in terms of creating jobs and becoming more energy independent. But at a time when Republicans now control the legislative branch, this is an issue that the vast majority of the American people see clearly as a good idea, so it paints the president potentially as an obstructionist and should give the conservatives in Congress more courage to push more things that might not be so cut and dried with the American people.
It's really kind of surprising to see a president take the stance that the opposition party winning control of both houses of Congress by wide margins. This is not a 51-49. There are 54 Senate Republicans and the largest House majority of Republicans in years, up to 240. Well, it was 247, now it's 246 with Michael Grimm gone. And Obama doesn't really care. it doesn't really matter. And never mind the fact that Keystone is very popular. He is not afraid to look obstructionist. And so I think the only way to make Obama pay is to make him go through this, again and again and again, and let everybody see that the whole narrative of, oh, he's the only adult in the room and he's so reasonable and, oh, these Republicans, they're so extreme, they just won't work with him. This is a guy who waited 2 hours before issuing a veto threat and kind of starting things off on a sour note. This guy just doesn't care anymore. Here's what we can expect from this president. And it's very hard to see how he's going to, salvage anything out of his presidency with an attitude like this.
All right, on to the bad martini now, and a truly bad one. It's a terrorist attack that unfolded in Paris today. CNN's Wolf Blitzer here with a summary of what happened.
French police are hunting for three terrorists. At least two of them stormed the offices of the satirical newspaper Charlie Hebdo and opened fire. Eyewitnesses took video that you're about to see as the attack unfolded just a few hours ago. It's shot from a nearby rooftop, and you can hear the gunfire ringing out and someone shouting, Allahu Akbar, or God is great. They have also cried, and I'm quoting, we have avenged the prophet.
And so these three terrorists are still on the loose. That's bad part number two, I guess, because there's 12 murders, 10 people at the magazine, two police officers killed. The bizarre thing here, Jim, is you just heard Wolf Blitzer say what these guys were shouting, God is great and the prophet has been avenged. At the exact moment he's saying that, on the ticker on CNN, it says motive has not been determined.
Yeah, that kind of willful ignorance is pretty irritating. This is an awful day, as I think my colleague Andrew Setterford had put in the corner. It is awful because it certainly seems that the timing of the attack suggests they had very good knowledge of the inner workings of this magazine. Apparently they were having a staff meeting. They knew what time of day and where it would be. They were looking for people by name. The death toll is awful. There are two policemen that are killed, and floating around the internet this morning, there's a video out there of them basically, I use the term executing, and somebody didn't like that term, murdering a cop in the street. They shoot him, the cop goes down, he is not dead yet, and they just go up and shoot him in the head. It is brutal. It is awful. And we're seeing a lot of very predictable debates about, well, you can't blame all Muslims for this. I have yet to see anybody who has said, well, this is the fault of all Muslims. I mean, it's this absolute straw man. I think the argument is that there is a furiously violent, dangerous, radical element in Muslim communities. And people outside Muslim communities are starting to ask very serious questions about whether Muslim communities turn a blind eye to this, whether they are as vehement in their denunciation as they ought to be, if they kind of have a certain amount of sympathy towards these brutal killers. And look, you know, this is a question better put to the Muslim communities of Paris and the Muslim communities of basically every city that has suffered a serious terror attack, whether it's Sydney, whether it's London back in 2005, or God forbid, you know, someplace over here. When somebody starts making, you know, noises about being radical and starts saying we should you know, strike back at infidels, what do the Muslims say or do? Do they say, yeah, I know what you mean? Or do they say, no, you shouldn't do that. We are not put on this earth to slaughter people. And I think those are fair questions to ask in the light of this. And, you know, I noticed that after the Sydney attack on Twitter, there was the hashtag I'll ride with you, because everyone was kind of afraid of this backlash against ordinary Muslims in Sydney and Australia. That backlash never really came. And so whenever these, you know, something terrible happens, we are told by our cultural betters to be on alert for non-Muslim violence against Muslims. That never seems to come to free, never seems to happen. Or if it happens on a very small scale and very rarely. And it's as if, you know, look, we have four killers on the loose in Paris right now, and we're being told to be careful about Islamophobia.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And Jim, last month, the president did something that seems to be rather unpopular, and that is announced that we are going to basically normalize relations with Cuba after what he considered decades of a failed strategy to try and isolate them. One of the things that he tried to say to reassure people that the United States is not giving up on trying to change the way things are in Cuba is that we're gonna stay real tough on them when it comes to their human rights record, and we're gonna call them out when it gets bad. Well, one of the things that was supposedly agreed to as part of this process towards normalization was for some political prisoners, some 53, to be released, and the Associated Press's Matt Lee brought that up with Jen Psaki at the State Department.
Is the release of the 53 confirmable publicly from you a prerequisite for Assistant Secretary Jacobson going down there and having these talks to start normalization?
A prerequisite? No, this is... Matt, no, this is something they've agreed to. I would point you to them for any updates on the number of people or if people have been released.
So we got to check in with the Cubans to see if this is actually taking place. I'm sure they'll be honest with us, Jim. Then another reporter asked her about subsequent political arrests, even after the announcement was made by the president, and what the administration's done about it.
On the dissidents who were arrested, arrested, temporarily detained, and then arrested again, at what level did the U.S. raise this with the Cuban government?
I don't have any details on that. I can see if there's more we have to offer.
Did you raise it at all, given that you said human rights, I think just a minute ago, would be part of your ongoing dialogue?
I don't have anything more to offer for you, Brad. I'll see if there's more to offer.
Very reassuring, Jim. They're going to stay on top of this.
I love the first part of that, Greg, where basically it's like, look, it's not our responsibility to make sure they're keeping their word. Trust but verify? What's that? This is the approach of this administration. And, you know, there are times where the criticism that Obama feels closer to anti-American regimes and terrorists than he does to our allies, you know, it can seem overwrought at times. But you look at the way he actually treats countries like our allies, like Israel or like the UK, and you look at the way he treats this regime and the kinds of concessions he's willing to make and what he's willing to give them and how little he asks of them in return. Man, it's very tough to come to that conclusion. And that when he looks at the U.S.-Cuban, you know, disputes and disagreements and opposition in the past, he looks and says it's our fault, that he really has a real beef with U.S. policy. And I think ultimately the other thing, I think it was Charles Lane who said, look, even if you think the Cuban deal is a good deal, and he was sketchy of it, he said, look, this sort of thing only works when there is follow-through and when there is close attention and when we don't, you know, kind of, you know, when there's a sustained effort. And he said, this administration doesn't sustain efforts. Something gets announced, the president gets his photo op, he gets his big ceremony, and then he moves on. And lo and behold, things don't get better. You can look at the Iraq withdrawal. You can look at the reset button with Russia. You know, this is a president who does the big showy event, and then later on it doesn't work. There's no reason to think things will be any better with this. And I think, you know, it puts the Psaki in a rather ridiculous position where she's got to say, don't worry, don't worry. You know, look, it's not our responsibility. I'm sure it's fine. Go ask them. Because, you know, the Cuban regime wouldn't lie. Right, Greg?
Of course not. Jim, on those less than cheery notes, we'll recycle again for tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.